to order, the call to order, I'd like to call this meeting to order. It's the Overton Power District Board Meeting in the Mesquite Office, October 16th, 3 p.m. Is there any public comment? I'd like a motion for the acceptance of the agenda.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we accept the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, I'd like to hear a motion for approval of the minutes of the previous meeting held September 18th, 2024.
I move we approve. You're going to second, or you're going to move it, and I'll second.
Whatever, Mike. You choose.
I gotcha.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll get you both on there. It's been moved and seconded that the minutes be approved. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, chair's report. I just have one simple thing to report. Well, it's not simple, it's important. I'm sorry for degrading it like that. It is a thank you note to the Power District again for expressing gratitude for a scholarship Freight received after graduating from Virgin Valley High School in 2023. I've recently completed my first year at Utah State University. Your generous support was a huge blessing with me going to college. Thank you so much for your support and best regards, Evan Toon.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
That's amazing.
That's good.
Yeah, I thought
that's
that was
a judge's good. Kid, isn't
yes.
It?
That is nice to hear. Attorney's report?
Madam Chair, I don't have anything at this time. Anything I will discuss will be in later agenda items, unless there's questions for him.
Not hearing any questions, we'll go on to the next item. Manager's report?
Engineering services. Let's start with Randall.
Oh, okay.
Keep you guys on your toes.
You just thought you was first.
Scott needs to leave.
Okay, that's fine.
Scott
let's
needs
go.
To leave early.
No, oh, no, you need to leave early,
no,
Scott?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Great. So we had some bid openings this past couple of weeks, and I'd like to share with you some of the results for the Raptor substation, long drive switchyard, and the Raptor T line. The low bidder was Hunt Electric at $3.9 million. The second second company was Energy Erectors out of Las Vegas at $4.2 million, and Summit Line Construction out of Las Vegas at $4.5 million. For the Tortoise 69 Bay and Ring Bus, the low bidder was Cache Valley Electric out of northern Utah at $1.1 million. Second place was Hunt Electric out of northern Utah at $1.2 million. And Energy Erectors in out of Las Vegas at $1.26 million. So we had some really close bids on all of those projects. We're very happy with the outcome. We had about seven or eight bidders on each of the projects. Have some future projects that you guys might not be aware of, I just want to share with you. Coming to Mesquite, we have a Spring Hill Suites Hotel in the Walmart commercial area. There's a Pink Donut box shop coming near the Panda. I was kind of happy to hear that. Another one, Hawaiian food truck facility coming into the commercial center. In Overton, we have a Tesla charging station coming into Moapa. There's a new American First building planned for the Overton area.
I'm wondering why we have the door.
And there's a Starbucks going up in near the Terrible Herbs in Moapa.
Will you check if somebody's in the lobby?
And that is my report, unless there's any questions. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Randall. Scott, let's go to you.
Okay. And I'm usually setting the bar, so I guess I'm still.
You still are.
What the hell, man? You do that quietly, right? Talk about everybody.
Be nice to everybody.
Come on.
Let's get into the cybersecurity report. Everybody, almost everybody was here at the NREA convention. They had a lot. They had some good classes or like good speakers on cybersecurity, AI. Also, there's a slide on my report that I did have AI generate, so we'll go through that too. Well, let's just get into some of the basic stuff. Cybersecurity training, we had 100% attendance. Some of the lessons that we had this month was how to implement robust access controls, regular security awareness trainings. One of the lessons was to encourage employees to use strong, unique, and enable MFA, multi-factor authentication. And the last lesson, foster a culture of cooperation and information sharing. It was really good training. Internal phishing, we're doing it really well. We have had 4 months now with nobody doing what they're not supposed to be doing, clicking, although I will say October, I will have one to report there so far that we know about. Email spam, we had 37,000 emails, 2,700 of those were spam, and that is firewall blocks by country. Russian Federation coming in number one. Server system uptime remains at 100%. Database backup and restoration, or data backup and restoration, remains at 100%. And the EISAC, we received 68 emails. And then what I did is I after I reviewed all of those emails, I copied 40 or 50 of them, whatever I could get on my screen, and I pasted that into Gemini. It's the Google product of AI. And I said, what are the key themes? What are the patterns? What are we seeing out of these emails, out of all these emails? Security incidents, a variety of threats, including malware attacks, physical security breaches, and data leaks, critical vulnerabilities. Several security vulnerabilities were identified and addressed. There was stuff on cybercrime, ransomware attacks. Physical security was still one of the themes of those emails, those 68 emails. Threats to physical infrastructure, such as vandalism and theft. And what are some of the patterns? Increasing sophistication, focus on critical infrastructure. Many of the incidents involve critical infrastructure, such as power plants and substations. And then ransomware attacks and other cyber crimes were some of the patterns. So I thought it was really pretty handy. I mean, AI does have application. You just got to know when and where to use it. And then last board meeting, we talked about what we post on Facebook. This is off of the cyber stuff. And so for Judy, I wanted to bring, these are all of the posts that we did in September. And I don't believe we had any outages. So we did a Labor Day. We did a WhatsApp.
Yeah.
Beautiful post there on the left. Information on the right there about gunfire on a pole. Delayed opening. Patriot Day. We did the September agenda. We did energy efficiency. And then last was ways you can use electricity. So we are posting. We are putting a lot of information out there.
You leave it up for about a week, is it?
It's up all the time. And it just cycles to the bottom of the feed. So the more we post,
it just keeps growing.
Yes, yes. And that's my report, unless there's questions.
I have a comment. I was really happy to see this one. The one on ways to say. I had a couple of comments from people on it.
Oh, good.
So
awesome.
It definitely got read by at least three people that told me about
at
it.
At least three.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I have a go back for Randall. With all the inflation and everything we've had, but those two bids that we had great attention to, were they within our original budget? Are they over budget? Or what does that look like?
One was a little bit over budget, one was a little bit under budget.
Okay.
Do they purchase the equipment or do we?
No, we purchase everything. It helps. We save sales tax that way, and also we control all the materials and when they're
sure.
getting
that's
to
smart.
Us. Yeah. That's just labor and equipment.
Okay, thanks, Randall. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Let's go ahead and go to Kyle for the line operations report.
Okay, for the line departments this month, start off with service installations by my department. We had 31 residential and 5 commercial service installations. Let's just run on average as we keep going through the year. Outages. We had 4 unplanned outages this month, so to speak to Scott's comment, we did have outages that were unplanned, but I think they were mostly after hours, so they didn't make the Facebook page necessarily that way. And then 14 planned, which is just our maintenance work that the men are doing out there. Those outages affected 111 customers. 111 customer hours for 121 customers. Oh, I said that backwards again. 111 customers and 121 customer hours for that month. And then we're going to start doing on a three-month rotation some of the stats and measurements for my department. This first one here is the service interruption stats. Corey spoke on them every month. The AC, we're still in a great position there with our AC and Sadie averages. AC is the average service availability. That's at 99.997. The Sadie is more of it as a ratio as pertains to minutes. And so our Sadie ratio is 0.03 minutes per customer. So it's very good. And those attribute to the fact that we don't have hurricanes that aim right at us, you know, and us, and also, so it's mostly major weather indicators, but also the fact that we jump right on those outages. Our men are immediately responding to those, whereas other utilities might not be the case. And I took a little snapshot down here of the major causes for those outages. Those titles there are used by all utilities, and ours mostly are in the weather and lightning, but we do see throughout the rest of the year the birds move in, migrate in, and they cause a lot also. So that's just interesting to monitor that major causes of those outages for us.
Do you list the number we have? Or just, you're just saying this is generally?
This is generally.
You don't have like five birds?
I could build that list, but really it does average out throughout the year where it just is. Certain times of the year, it's mostly weather, like we had back in July, like I reported with those windstorms that came through. But then as it comes into the cooler seasons, you have those blackbird starlings that move through, and it just goes with the flow, quite honestly. Yeah. I could obviously populate that, but I don't know if that would be that interesting.
No.
So this next slide here is just the key measurables for the mostly the line team here. Down in the bottom right, those are the total jobs worked by the line teams. Those are the major jobs. Those are the jobs that the stakers from the engineering department actually populated paperwork for, and we did. Those don't include hookups, the service installations we talked about in the first slide. These are just the major projects that we've worked in the last 3 months. This is a snapshot of the last 3 months. So 26 jobs in the last 3 months. Poles up in the top left corner, those are retired poles. Those are projects where an overhead line was through a particular neighborhood. The workers go through and take that to an underground project mostly, and those poles are retired at that point. So 18 poles were retired in the last 3 months. Poles changed are more about the weather and decay, old poles that we found through our audit processes, and we've changed out. So 15 changed poles in the last 3 months. Bottom left, we got the wire that we've installed. All the different ranges. We've got secondary wire, 1-aught high voltage, 500 high voltage, and 1100 high voltage. The 1100 I spoke on last month at the board report was that backbone that we installed down here in the industrial area. That's a high number for us. We do install a lot of 1100 at times, but that's exceptionally high for us. So into the future, as I bring this up, during the months, that one will stand out, and it probably won't grow as much as this one right here in this one snapshot. On the right there, we have inspections, audits, and locates. Inspections are the men that go out and inspect not only trenches, new meter panels, all the work mostly that's done by contractors. We have inspectors that go in, out and proof and put our stamp on it for Overton Power, and that's how many inspections they did in the last 3 months. Audits are the first step of our maintenance plan. Those men go out there and do an audit on a particular site, whether it be a pole, a transformer, a vault, and they document and they collect all that data, and then they give that audit, that site, a rating, whether we need to go back and revisit, if it's sound, if it's good, but we visit those on a rotation. And that's how many audits were done in the last 3 months there, that 969. And then locates, we have locators that have to respond to construction projects all throughout our territory and just put out locate our lines. And that gives you a little indication of how much workload they're doing there. Safety meeting for the month of September was workplace violence and sexual harassment. That was a required topic. So we have 52 attendees right now, but we'll have every employee at Overton Power will
get that training here in the near future, as soon as we can get it scheduled with our HR person. And then the stat for this is our 6 years, 11 months, 27 days since the lost time accident. So we're still doing excellent there.
Excellent.
And we strive for that. These last few slides are just the biggest job that we've done in the last little while. I want to just key on it. I got a long presentation here, but this one I couldn't pass up sharing with you. At the Tortoise substation, we're doing all that work for the new ring bus, and my team got tasked with removing the jumpers to de-energize this particular section of the Tortoise substation. So on the right here, you can see these jumpers here that go down to this piece of equipment here. That's what they're removing. This picture here is the same story. This just shows a closer snapshot. And so it's 230,000 volts face-to-face, 132,000 face-to-ground that these men are working live with fiberglass sticks out of these buckets like this. And it's just it's a one-off job, like, quite honestly. And we don't know when in the future if we'll ever do this again with our design of our system now. So it was incredible that we got the opportunity to do this, and we got some good pictures and good videos we'll share here with you. I'll go to the next one. This is a good picture by the sub-ops camera there in Tortoise. But it shows those men, they have to keep 5'6" off that conductor. That's the minimum approach distance. So they're on the end of an 8-foot stick working that. It is heavy. It is tedious. You can see those boys flexing up there. Awesome work. Amazing work. So this rope here goes down to the men on the ground. They've got insulation between the men on the ground and this rope. The rope is also dielectric. Goes up through the rigging here, and then that's supporting the weight of that vertical piece of conductor. Now the rest of the men are up there, and you'll see they have a ratchet, just a socket and a ratchet up here, but they're unbolting that conductor from that horizontal conductor. So they unbolt it, they hold it in the clear, or they hold it together until it's time to make the disconnect from it. And you can, it's incredible. Here in a minute, I got a video of it, but it just, you're just breaking that short piece of conductor, and it carries that capacitance, and it just breaks that arc, and it sounds like lightning going off. It's incredible.
Wow.
If it plays. It's quick. So that's the sound you hear. That's that 230,000 volts, so. Incredible job. Well, that's my report, unless there's any questions, comments.
Play your video one more time. That was quick.
I was going to say, but I don't know. Can you help me out there?
Yes.
There we go.
Thank you, Kyle. Good report.
Excellent.
All right, Kevin, would you like to give us a sub-ops report?
Sure.
Follow that up, Kev.
I'm going to, Becky. It probably won't be as exciting. All right. Well, first, I want to report that we hired a new person in our department on the substation side, Tanner Hammonds. He was an intern for us this year, and he did such an amazing job. We hired him. We were replacing a position that had been vacant for about 6 months, maybe. So anyway, we're glad he's on our team, and we look forward to the exciting things he's going to do for us. My report, I probably shouldn't get too far away from the notes. So, I reported last month about a GE transformer that got delivered to our Tortoise substation at 60 MVA transformer. GE is there now this week. This was yesterday. And they're assembling that transformer. You can see all the cooling fins they've got on. They're going to put this up on top of here so they can put the conservator in, and they're going to start piping all of this. It's quite a process to do. They should be done, I think they were going to be done by Monday, but they've got to take and install all of this equipment, put the bushings in, and then they have this big truck where they hook some hoses up for hydraulic hoses, and they cycle the oil that's in that. They'll actually have to fill the transformer, but they pull it through the equipment inside this truck, and it's heated, and it's pushed out into the transformer, and the moisture and all the contaminants is pulled out when they push that through there. And they'll do about 2 full passes heating that oil and then processing it, put it back in, and then they'll vacuum it down to, I can't remember how much vacuum, but once they vacuum it down, it's got to sit at that vacuum for 24 hours. And if it loses vacuum, they've got to go and find out where that leak is and fix it. And so it's quite the process. So anyway, they will be done putting that together. Like I say, by, they're hoping Monday, they're going to work through the weekend to try to get it done. So, and this is all part of the purchase price of that transformer.
Nice.
Next thing I wanted to report, Kyle touched a little bit on dropping those jumpers. This is where those jumpers were at right here. This is a 69 bay, so I'm going to go back and forth between a couple of slides. This is the new 230 brain bus that we're installed that's actually sitting in Tortoise. This is where the new line from Reed Gardner attaches, is right there. So they've built this section right here to here. They've put that together now. And so the idea now is we've got to energize this line to this bus work right here and energize this. And then they'll do some testing on it before they re-energize back. Once it's all tested and they feel good about it, they'll energize the 69 bay back up. We'll do some switching and we'll take this bay out of service. And then they'll start that process all over again about putting this bus work together. And then this is the last one they'll bring this and put it in very last. So it's got to be done in three stages, just because we can't de-energize any of this at the same time. It's got to be done in three different stages. And so what this ring bus does for us is this is where the old line is existing. It comes across right through here through a string bus. Go back to there. This string bus goes all the way across the substation. And this is the second phase that they're going to do, is that one right there. But it goes all the way across the substation, and it's got to be moved from here to here, and then it'll attach into this ring bus. So you've got a 230 line coming in here, a 230 line coming in here, and then it's a ring bus, so that if any point of that ring bus breaks, you've still got the other side that goes around. It makes it, the redundancy is really good that way, and that's why we designed it, is for a lot better redundancy. And so when it's all said and done, we will have 2 feeds coming in from Ring Gardner, and then this is our main bay and auxiliary bay. By the time we're done with all of this, we should be able to have some pretty good redundancy coming out of that substation. So,
you made my day.
Good.
Removes potential bottlenecks then.
Yeah, it does. Yep. Yeah.
It removes bottlenecks, and it also, you know, we've had a couple of system-wide outages because poles have been hit by lightning. And so it will remove those types of problems unless both lines get hit by lightning. But the new line is all steel, so that it should mitigate that problem. And it will allow us, if we do have a pole fire, that we can feed off the steel line and make the repairs on the wood line. And typically when we're working on that wood line, we're putting steel poles back in to mitigate that problem.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my report. And if you have any questions, thank you.
It's nice to see something that we've talked about for so long actually visualize it.
It's coming together.
What's going to happen?
They started that switch over last week when we were in NREA meetings. They de-energized that so they could cut it over. They're ready for that to be re-energized and start that second phase. So it'll be in three different phases.
Oh, fabulous.
And if everything goes well, it will be switched completely over by the 1st of November.
Oh, yay.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Our team is doing a great job on keeping up with those projects. We have a lot going on. Melissa, why don't you go next?
Okay. I have, since I have last, our last meeting, I have been meeting with CEOs from some of our large customers in our service territory, and I also made a goal to meet with each of the principals from all of our local schools. There was a number of things that I wanted to visit with the principals about: outage communication, outage protocols for longer-term outages, but I also wanted to talk about some programs that I would like for us to institute inside of their schools. So we have, of course, electrical safety, and Christy has met with each one of the principals with me, as she'll be heading up a lot of these programs and handling the outage communication. For the electrical safety, we are coming up with programs that are age-appropriate So something as simple as a color book for our kindergartner and first graders. And then as the kids get older, all the way up to an experience with our demo trailer and our line crew. The other thing that I also wanted to really touch on with the principals was career aspirations. Many times when we talk to young people about coming to work at Overton Power, they picture being a lineman, which is a wonderful trade, and we would love for them to go to school and come to work for us. But I think that it's important, especially at that junior high age, if we could get into their schools for some career days and show them how many careers are in our local communities. And at Overton Power alone, you could work in communications, cybersecurity, marketing, accounting, engineering, customer service, and of course line crew, substations and SCADA. So I would like for them to be able to see that we have many opportunities for them to come and go to school and then come and work back in our communities. So I was meeting with a principal in Logandale, and I told him, part of my aspiration for this is they get so excited to come to work for us that they decide to come and be a summer helper. And then Randall and his team encourage them to pull weeds all summer long, and that motivates them to go to college and become an engineer or an accountant. So Mr. Robison shared with me, he asked, "Do you know Kevin Street?" And I smiled and said, "Yes, sir, I worked with him for many years." And he said, "When I was right out of school, I got a job as a summer helper to help build the Tortoise substation, and I worked for Kevin Street." And part of Kevin's motto was that if you are a temp, you are not allowed to walk. You should be running everywhere you go, or at the very least, a jog. And he said, at the end of the summer, I decided that I would like an office job, and I went and got an education. And so I consider Mr. Robison OPD5's very first success story. We motivated him. Yeah. He's a wonderful principal. And
that's a great story.
Yes, I thought that was great. We had a retirement in our finance department. Jolene retired after many years of working for us in the accounting. Her replacement was handled through succession planning. Her replacement is doing a wonderful job, but she is now fully retired, and we are wishing her the best, and she is not regretting that one minute. I visited with her a few days ago, and she said, "I miss everybody, but I'm never coming back." So, and that's great. Arizona Public Authority invited us to attend a meeting they were having for embedded customers. Now, what an embedded customer is, we are an embedded customer of NV Energy. They are our balancing authority, and so when they make a decision that affects the entire balancing authority, as an embedded customer, not always do we have input on that. So Arizona Public Authority held a meeting in Phoenix and said, "We want to meet with all of these embedded customers to give a voice to all of the market changes that are happening. We know that EDAM, the day-ahead market, is happening. There's the energy imbalance market. There's the Southwest Power Pool was represented there, CAISO, and WAPA, Western Area Power Administration." So it was a very informative meeting. Unfortunately, my calendar did not allow for me to be able to go, so I asked Kevin to go in my place and represent us, and then come back and give a report to staff on that. And he indicated it was a very good meeting. But as a leader, you're told that you just never know what to expect. Every day could be a little bit different. So on the day of the meeting, I was going to text him and say, you know, "Good luck at the meeting. Let me know how it goes." But I received a text from Kevin. And I thought, okay, he's flown down there. His flight is probably delayed. He can't find the meeting. Something's happened. And I received the following video. Stephen, if you could play that for me.
"Melissa, I'm on my way to the meeting. This is my ride."
So I promptly responded, "Kevin, when it's safe to do so, exit the car. Get to the meeting and call a cab for your ride back to the airport," which he did not. He rode in the same car back, and he was excited because he got to pick the music. And so, again, it just goes back to you never know what to expect on a day-to-day basis.
That's
The last update that I have for you is that we attended and we had an amazing showing from our Board of Trustees and staff. The NREA 50th annual meeting. That meeting is, NREA is from 1974 to 2024. That was incredible. We had such amazing speakers. We had industry leaders like Dave Luttrell. Dr. Peter Murrow gave a strategic talk on Thursday that I just found absolutely captivating. Such a good speaker. We also heard from, and now I have to remind myself what his name was, and he was incredible as well. It doesn't matter. He was from NRECA's cybersecurity, Ryan Newland, and he talked on demystifying AI. I thought that was really a very good conversation, not just on the security with AI and what's required, but he really touched on the fact that everybody is learning and growing in this part of our jobs, and the fact that there are networking abilities and that NRECA holds meetings that we can go and get information or receive updates from is so important, because we're all learning this together. So I thought that we had very good talks. It was very informative. And of course, it's wonderful for us to have the networking ability, both with the board members from our neighboring utilities, but with the leaders from those neighboring utilities as well. Our staff finds that incredibly valuable. In addition to attending the meeting or at the meeting, Stephen, if you'll change to the next page, I don't know why. This is getting to me all over again, but Lindis was awarded the Vernon D. Dalton Award. That was a wonderful moment, both for Mindus and his wife, but for us as employees. So the Vernon D. Dalton Award is given to individuals who show exceptional commitment to furthering the cause of electric cooperatives and public power. Some of the previous recipients of the Vernon D. Dalton Award are the former Governor of Energy Director Angie DeKaima, Senator Pete Gogachia, and the former Wells Rural Electric CEO Clay Fitch. So Mindus is in incredible company, and it was an honor to be there and watch that presentation. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, I guess. I was hoping that you would go into that part.
Sorry.
I was hoping Kyle would show a picture of this. So let me just speak to this a little bit. About a month ago, I received a call from the power director from the Boulder City Municipal Utility, and he wanted to know if they could borrow our safety demo trailer that we have. And I told him, I says, hey, you know, we're not comfortable. You know, it's a pretty expensive. It could be a little bit of a complicated trailer. We don't mind taking it over there, but I want to send a couple of guys over there. And we don't have any problem with you using it. So they had a public power day in Boulder City. Kyle sent two of our guys over there, and our job was just to be there to show the guys how it worked and make sure that they did it safely and correctly. Well, when they got there, I guess the lineman from Boulder City kind of chickened out, and they wanted our staff, which was Cody Hardy and Luis Gonzalez, to run the trailer and do the presentation. And they've done this so many times that they just picked up with it and just ran with it. And just a phenomenal presentation that they did there. So we've received a couple of notes. The mayor from Boulder City and the power director and some others have sent us some kind notes. And Kyle's guys did a great, great job there. And it was posted in the Boulder City paper and on their website. So our guys just did a fantastic job. So thank you, Kyle.
It's also on our social media.
What's that?
The pictures are on our social media.
Oh, that's right. They're on our social media, too. I forgot that.
It's just...
Will you pull up my PowerPoint, please, Stephen? So, Mike Young and I attended the NRECA Region 7 and 9 meeting that was held in Sacramento. I'll just have you run it, Stephen. Can you run it, or do you want me to? Okay. So... Region 7, you can see the four states that belong in Region 7. and then those of us that are in Region 9. So let's go to the next slide, please. The first day I attended a class on, scenario-based planning and making optimal investments in your grid facilities. So let's go to the next one here. These are some of the things that we talked about, planning and incorporating these different assets into our grid technology. We had some great discussions about this. Let's go to the next one, Stephen. This is just a little bit of a flow chart that we discussed, how you would incorporate in these things into your utility. And we had a great group discussion about this. We were assigned to work in groups and work through some scenarios together and had some great discussions there. Let's go to the next one, Stephen. This is just some more of the framework that's involved in this type of planning. And then the next one also tells you a little bit about how you should do things and maybe some things that you should avoid in scenario-based planning. So overall, very good class. I sat with a really good group. A lot of them were from Nevada that we sat together. And Kevin Street joined us at our table, and we had a great discussion there. Let's go to the next one now, Stephen. At lunch, we heard from Andrew Don, who's the CFC CEO, and he gave us a breakdown on the economy and just really gave us a really detailed and interesting discussion about where he thought rates were going, how the economy would perform, and how that's going to affect CFC and all of the power utilities. So very good discussion there. Let's go to the next one, Stephen. I had this written down on my notes, and I couldn't get him to print, so I'm sorry. I forgot his name, but he did a presentation. Mike and I talked about this, and when he got done, we thought, oh, we don't know where this came from. It was an hour of charts that you couldn't follow and stuff that he was talking about. That it was just crazy. So I just thought, I just put this in here so Mike and I could have a chuckle. Let's go to the next one, Stephen.
I'm glad you forgot his name.
He works for a contractor, and it's a government entity. And it was...
explains it all.
$490 million funding?
Yeah, $490 million of funding, and they're kind of producing gibberish. So part of our Region 9 meeting was the business meeting. If you'll go to the next one, Stephen. This was the committee members, and you can see on the right side in the blue shirt, Mr. Young was on this committee and represented us at the Region 9 meeting, and they talked about a number of things. Let's go to the next slide. One of the things that they did was to fill the standing committees. They had some nominees, and they discussed those. You can see in the middle on the regulatory committee, a gentleman from Idaho and one from Utah nominated and seconded that Melissa serve on that standing NRECA committee. And let's go to the next slide, Stephen. The next day, that was approved by all the voting members in Region 9. And then also on the last day, we had an opportunity to meet with Jim Matheson, the CEO of NRECA, and we had just a really nice one-on-one discussion with just the utilities from Nevada. So very, you know, a group of about 15 people, and we were able to ask him questions and talk about our own issues and how they were treating some of those. And, you know, a lot of this circulated around hydropower, the removing of some of the dams and how NRECA can better protect hydropower and how they can better promote resources that we can use that will generate power so that we can meet our opportunities. So you can go to the next one now, Stephen. I believe that was the last one. So very good NRECA meeting. I also wanted to let you know that at the NREA meeting, I had a great opportunity to meet with Patrick Ledger from Arizona Electric Power Authority. He was there along with one of his top staff, Chris Jimenez, who works on their power trading desk. Talked to them about some opportunities to maybe participate in projects down the road. And these networking opportunities that we have to talk to other leaders and people about other projects were really important. We had a great, great conversation. APCO is going to send us some paperwork so that we can file a letter of interest with them to maybe participate on some things together in the future. And then finally, I just want to let you know that we continue to work with Tenasca Power Services. Our transition is going great as we move toward our next contract. We've had some great discussions about what we need to do to transition. We've had some great discussions about how things are going to work. They've actually sat in on discussions with us and NV Energy to help coordinate things. They've also participated in some of the discussions with our solar provider. They'll probably act as the scheduling coordinator for that solar provider as they move power through our system. So they're really getting integrated in a lot of the things that we're doing and helping us really prepare for the future. So we've been very pleased with them, and we have another meeting with them tomorrow in Las Vegas. And that's my report, unless you have some questions for me.
Excellent report.
Okay, thank you.
I really appreciate the part about working with the Arizona Electric and other opportunities.
Yeah, there's, you know, in the West, there's not opportunities that come by every day. And so when you get a chance to talk to somebody and have the potential to maybe work together, that's a really big deal.
Yeah,
really big deal.
Thank you for pursuing her.
One of the things that the scientist said, which I thought was amazing, is he said that power demand is going to go up by essentially double.
Yeah.
And all the difference new is going to be solar and wind. That was his comment. And looking at him and going, you must be crazy. Anyway, he also showed nuclear power essentially going down to nothing, and coal going down to nothing, gas going up a little, but all the new power supply was by wind, or renewables, wind, I guess, and solar. So it was quite...
Yeah, and that makes sense if you only want to use things during the daytime.
Yeah,
so
we decided to move everything to days.
Yeah, one of his charts, it was interesting, and Mike's right, he showed the demand on the grid doubling, and it showed the declining resources, and Mike's right, there were no, and I want to emphasize this, no firm resources that are identified to help fill that gap. In fact, they're taking out the firm resources faster than they're even building new renewables. So that's going to be a challenge going forward, especially with all the electric cars and electrification of everything, the Internet of Things. There's going to be some challenges ahead of us. So,
absolutely.
So very interesting. Jonathan, would you like to give us our financial report, please?
So beginning with our statement of operations on line one for the month of September, our total operating revenues were $5,062,000. Our total cost of purchase power on line three was $2,215,000, which contributed to our total cost of electric service on line 20 of $3,408,000. On line 22, we had investments, interest from investments, in the amount of $118,888. And then also this contributed to our 29 total margins for the month of September of $1,941,000. And on column B, down there in the same line, our year-to-date margins are $9,381,000. Our balance sheet, beginning on the asset side, our total utility plant value is $181 million. Our net utility plant value on line five is $132 million. On line eight, we have investments in associated organizations. Line 15, cash. Line 18, our temporary investments. Line 23, materials and supplies, all contributing to our total asset value on line 29 of $182,430,000. Over on our liability side, beginning on line 36, our total margins in equities is $125,018,000. On line 40, our long-term debt. Line 48, accounts payable, and again contributing to our total liabilities on line 57 of $182,430,000. Our cash held in checking accounts totaled $3,841,066. And our investment accounts and our Morton account, we closed with a total value of $30,262,000. Average rate of return in that account is 4.62%. And then on our Goldman account, we have a value of $617,000, and our average rate of return is 4.83%.
Before you go on, Jonathan, later in our capital budget discussion, remember that $30,262,000. Write that down if you need to, because we'll talk about that.
Here's a graphical representation of our securities held in the Morton account of the $30 million by security type in the pie chart and by security duration in the bar graph. As of September 30th, 2024, OPD has a total of 18,632 customers. Our modified debt service coverage ratio with estimates throughout the end of the year is 2.58. Equity as a percentage of assets is 68.57%. And our times interest earned ratio is 7.35. Connection fees for September, we received 23, valued at $33,153. Our current billing arrangements with our residential customers are 36, valued at $8,080, and we have three commercial customers valued at $3,124.
Excuse me, John.
Uh-huh.
On connection fees, 23, is that for future connections or something that is going to be in the future? Is it right now? Because it showed 50 new customers.
Right. Those are current connection fees receive. So if we go back, the new customers, this is where the payment is being received, and those don't always line up with the when we receive the new customers and when payment is received. Well, Lisa has anything other?
Yep. Those are all the future new connections coming in and paying their deposit.
Okay, thank you. My roundup program in both valleys is displayed there at the for the month of ending of the month of September. So our loans with CFC, our last quarterly payment was due September 30th, an amount of $1,425,000. It was paid on time and paid in full, and our total loan. Outstanding loan balance is $47,619,000, with our average rate interest rate at 3.35%. And loan number 7, which was due for repricing on October 1st, which was after September 30th, we went ahead and included the repricing rate at right here, 5.18% is what we were able to get. With the current balance, with the outstanding balance showing there, that was before our discounts of 45 basis points. Here's a breakdown of our revenue by customer class, with the totals at the bottom enlarged here on the next slide. Down towards the bottom, our monthly cost of power is 4.92 cents. Our monthly revenue is 10.02 cents, and our year-to-date 2024 average cost is 4.91 cents. And that concludes my presentation, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you, Jonathan.
All right.
Those are our reports.
Well, thank you very much. They were very interesting tonight.
Good.
Okay, item H, review and possible approval of a non-disclosure agreement with GLS Project Fabian for possible action.
So Randall's been working with Project Fabian on this, and just before Randall takes over, let me tell you that I don't know who's passed out our number, but we've been getting calls and sometimes multiple calls every day to install data centers, hydrogen processing plants, manufacturing of some type, and home builders, both here in Mesquite and in the Moapa area. So we have a lot of these coming through, and you're going to see more of these NDA discussions. So, Randall, there's your lead in. I'll let you take it from here.
Okay, well, I don't have much more to add. Thank you. This NDA has been shared with Byron. He looked it over, and it is a standard agreement. If there's any questions you guys have pertaining to the project, we can talk about it in executive session. But other than that, I'm not really going to disclose a lot about the project, other than it's a very large wanting to come into our area. It's about a 50-50 choice between us and another area. So, and we have another meeting with them towards the end of the month. They're actually bringing a group of people out to look at it, and we're going to be meeting with them. So we're suggesting that, we're asking you to agree to let us sign the NDA agreement with GLS.
What are they manufacturing?
Again, we probably need to talk about an executive session.
And we don't know a lot. They aren't telling us much.
They're not disclosing anything. Right?
No, we don't even know all the people that are involved until we sign the NDA. So
okay.
They're pretty tight-lipped.
If we do learn about it, the NDA does apply to the board members, of course. So
sure.
You'll have to keep it. And anytime I look at one of these NDAs, I'm always looking for one key phrase that's necessary in them. And this one does have it, that confidential information shall not include information which is required to be disclosed pursuant to government regulation, and which means at some point when you guys vote on it, they understand that this is going to have to become public information at the point you vote on it. And so as long as that's in there, I generally approve these NDAs, otherwise it has to go in.
It's just all discussions prior to that.
Everything prior to that has got to be confidential.
Okay.
Well, I move that we approve a non-disclosure agreement with Global Location Strategies as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve item H. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? Sorry. Item I, discussion for possible future OPD rates.
Well, this has been, you know, typically when we look at rates, we see a little more clarity than we have this time. We have a lot of moving parts this time as we've been looking at rates, and we've spent a great deal of time looking at things. And we've had to consider things like, you know, our load growth, our new contract, and many other things. And Melissa has led up these discussions. In fact, she was just on the phone with CFC this morning making some final determinations so we could bring this to the board. She's done a great job. She's performed the analysis. She's brought to me a number of questions that we've worked through together and with CFC and with our power provider. And she's done a great job to this point, and she's gonna describe where we're at and what we've gone through and what we recommend.
Okay, so let's talk about rates. Where are power costs going? Depending on the news source, the context, and the type of resource, the answers to that question can vary. But overall, from this side of the table, we can say with great confidence that the cost of power is increasing. So what drives power costs? Fuel costs, the increase in fossil fuels. As we've discussed with you guys multiple times, when we signed our current contract with Morgan Stanley Commodities Group, natural gas was at a record low. Supply and demand. Growing demand for electricity, especially during peak seasons, can be triggered by both higher usage due to weather, economic expansion, or population growth. Infrastructure investment. This is both aging infrastructure being replaced, but it is also the addition of infrastructure to meet the capacity and reliability needs for your consumers. Regulatory changes. New environmental regulations can increase operating costs. Renewable energy integration. Transitioning to renewable energy sources involves upfront costs for technology and infrastructure, as well as the redundancy of those baseload powers to fill in for those intermittent resources. Weather events, we see that extreme weather such as a hurricane, a heat wave, a drought, they can all disrupt supply and increase demand, leading to higher rates. And last but not least is market dynamics, the change in market structure as well as supply chains. We've talked recently a great deal about a market change that we ourselves are facing with NV Energy making the decision to join the day-ahead market. We don't know exactly what those implications are as far as what the day-ahead market is going to affect us, but all indications are it will result in an increase to Overton Power. So what is driving the increase or the change in our cost at OPD 5? Morgan Stanley Commodities Group has provided firm load following power resource, firm transmission service, load forecasting, coordination with WAPA for our hydropower resources, and the scheduling of all of our power resources from all across the Western grid since June of 2016. As negotiations for the renewal of that contract showed, the current market rates were trending between $109 and $113 per megawatt. The current contract that we have with Morgan Stanley is at just over $44 per megawatt. So as we continued negotiations and we saw other suppliers, the Board of Trustees ultimately signed a contract with Tenasca Power Services for just under $88 per megawatt, and that is to begin in January of 2025. This contract will provide all of the current contract provisions, as well as the scheduling of the new solar resources that will be coming online in July of 2025. So how does this affect our bottom line? The market portion of our portfolio is anticipated to increase $16.2 million. OPD5's total power cost is anticipated in 2025 to be $38.6 million. We have an addition of 25 megawatts of solar that will begin in July of 2025. The cost of the increase in the new contract with market less that solar for January to June, that is an increase alone of $2.1 million that we have to make up those 6 months waiting for that resource to come online. So what does that mean that we need from our rates? Power costs are anticipated to increase again by $16.2 million. We have additional revenue from increased sales as we have seen our sales grow. That is an increase of $4.1 million. OPD 5 is recommending a margin reduction of $5.1 million. That gives us additional revenue required of $7 million. A rate increase to be passed to our customers to fill that $7 million need would range between, when we transition this, that made that a little bit weird. I apologize. That since sign is supposed to be at the end, but when we converted it to Google, that didn't work out so well. The rate increase required would be 0.0165 to 0.0173, so just over 1.5 cents per kWh increase for every kWh that we would sell. Now, NRUCFC's revenue requirement study and cost of service study recommended that we apply that rate evenly across all energy sold for every rate class. I want to remind you guys that this does not affect our demand costs, and it does not affect our base charge. Those costs are being accurately recovered right now. But what we are seeing is that our power cost is going up, so we are going to have to pass some of that increase required onto our customers.
When you say margin reduction, what are you specifically referring to?
So we have about a $10 million margin anticipated for 2024, and we are anticipating about a $5 million margin for 2025.
And just to maybe prep the discussion, you know, we've been taking that extra margin, we've been putting it into our reliability projects, so that we can provide that stability that we need in our system. So going forward, we're not going to have that money to put into those. We're going to have to probably look to do some borrowing, and there's some other implications of this that we can talk about later, but I don't know if you noticed, several weeks ago, Mesquite was named the fastest growing city in the state. That comes with the cost. We need to put the facilities in, and that's going to drive us to take on more borrowing because we're not going to be able to cover as much. We're only trying to cover the power cost with this rate increase that's being passed on to us.
An earlier slide indicated that our power rate is double, from 44 to 88.
Yes.
Double.
Yes.
If it makes up half our revenue, doesn't it have to go up a little higher? And I know you're taking some away from the margin, but the margin is paying for a lot of our capital projects, mm-hmm. internal capital projects, not the big reliability.
That's a really good question, and Melissa has the answer.
So yes, we're saying that we're reducing the margin. The other thing that I'll get to in just a second is that we've also signed that solar contract. So that is 25 megawatts that during those hours we will be buying at just under $35 a megawatt that will be
$35. Yes. So that's actually less than we're paying right now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then when you factor in the hydro,
yeah.
You know,
same
that helps
price, but
that helps bring it down. And, you know, this is the way we say it, it waters down our hydro, right, when we have to pay a higher price. So, but the hydro on that solar does tend to bring that 88 down just a little bit, but not as much because of the extreme growth that we're getting right now.
So it's, 88 is just the cost of our contract. That
market.
Has nothing to do with the hydro. Okay.
That's correct.
Hmm. This is not a funny topic, and so I'm not trying to make a joke here, but I had to share with you guys. Dr. Moreau at the NREA conference, he talked about having ChatGPT create images for him. And I thought, well, gosh dang, I didn't even know that ChatGPT could do that. So I typed in and I said, make me a picture that includes the words revenue requirement. And it did give me this picture. And above it, it said revenue requirement. And it tried three times, and never once did it spell the word revenue or requirement correctly. So I cropped it out, and I just used the bottom. So that's my experience with ChatGPT. Scott was obviously much more successful with his experience. So anyway, sorry to digress. How do revenue requirements different from the NRU CFC presentation? So they came and presented to you guys in March, and there's a couple of differences. The revenue requirement study was based on actual sales from 2022 with some estimates for the remainder of 2023. The estimates were based on the continued contract negotiations. We were at the very end of those negotiations, but if you guys remember, I believe you signed the contract with Tenasca the following month or two months later. So just after that presentation was made, the board approved the new contract, and those revisions were then made to their revenue requirement for us. But the very largest change is directly related to the large growth in KWH sales. From 2023 to 2024, we saw an 8.9% increase in the energy that we sold. Now, this is directly related to new customers, but also it is directly related to weather. If you remember, I think it was 2 months ago, or maybe last month, Mindus reported to you that we surpassed our all-time peak sales 6 times this year for the daily sale, or daily peak. And our system peak in 2023 was at a max of 116 megawatts. And in 2024, our peak was 124.7 megawatts. So we have an incredible growth. Now, what does that growth really mean? And Mindus alluded to this. We have a portion of our portfolio that comes from hydro. And then we have a larger portion that is coming from the market. As we sell more power every kWh, we get to use less of the hydro and more of the market. So the more we buy, the more it costs. Now, Chad, I think it was 2 months ago, you asked about, during Jonathan's report, why was the revenue per kWh going down? And we tried to explain that it's economy of scale, but that's exactly what it is. You have in your rates set a certain amount to recover, and then a certain amount as margins. And as you pay higher and higher for the power cost, because you're buying more and more from the market portion of your portfolio, that those margins are eroded. And so we're seeing that with this anticipated need of $7 million. So what does that impact look like? Price increases can be challenging for our customers. It strains their budget, it disrupts their financial planning, and many of our customers have fixed or limited incomes. So even a small increase creates an impact. We are very sensitive to that. We are a not-for-profit entity. We are not here to return anything to our stakeholders. This is purely to keep our power company sound so that we can continue to provide power to all of our customers. So what have we done to help mitigate some of these cost increases to our customers? We've been continuing to be diligent at keeping our operating costs low. You guys know that when I present to you guys the key ratio trend analysis, my favorite ratio to tell you is our controllable expenses. Now, our fixed expenses are depreciation and power cost, and everything else we say we have control over that expense. So on that KRTA, for the state of Nevada, the average controllable expense per consumer is $1,173. Now you remember there's 7 respondents from our state. The median for utilities our size is $608, but our controllable expense last year was at $468 per customer. We take maintaining our expenses incredibly serious. We signed a 25 megawatt solar contract at a much lower than market rate. This offsets the energy that would have been purchased on that market for those hours each month. There is also another caveat that comes with that solar contract because of the where that entity decided to place their solar array. They will then need to sell the remaining portion that they produce back out onto the grid. And so they will be using our system to wheel that power cost, and we will be getting revenue for the use of our system as well.
Is that included in the cost, the 3.5 that you mentioned, or is that coming off
no,
that?
No, that will reduce that even more.
Fantastic.
We continue to advocate on behalf of hydropower, ensuring that we continue to get low-cost, fully renewable resource to add to our portfolio mix. And we reduce the margins received annually to pay for a portion of the cost increase to ensure that our customers do not have the entire increase passed on to them.
And just going back to the hydropower, you know, we've been receiving a little bit of layoff from the industries in Las Vegas that aren't using their hydropower. And Melissa's worked with the Colorado River Commission to try and lock those up for the next 3 years. And I think that we're going to be able to do that, so that we'll be able to continue to receive those layoffs when we were a little bit afraid that we might lose those. But we're able to do that, and we're factoring those in as well.
You said, though, you're not passing on the cost, our increased cost.
I said the entire increased cost.
And the reduction is in our margin.
Yes. So we have been sequestered in this wonderful contract for the last 8 years, and with no rate increases to our customers since 2012. We are now out of that current contract and into the current market, and those rates are significantly higher than what we've been paying. If we looked at, and we've discussed with our board in the past, we've went so long without a rate increase, but the board made the decision that we were not going to impose a rate increase on our customers until we needed it. And today is the day that we need to start discussing that we absolutely need it. But our customers have benefited. And I think that we've known that we've had a wonderful contract with Morgan Stanley. We knew when we were paying $44 for our market contract and we were getting rates back at $113 that we had a very, very good contract. I feel very strongly that we negotiated the very best contract that we could, and we got that locked in at $87.70. But it is, in fact, an increase from what our current rate is, and that increase is going to have to be passed on, a portion of it, to our customers, unfortunately.
So what you're saying is, I saw some other revenue, by the way, significant other revenue income being subtracted from that other than our margin, right?
Well, there's a certain level, when we talk about growth, that we're selling more energy, so we're buying more energy, but we're also selling more energy. And so you have to look at and say, we still have revenue coming from those increased sales.
That is only our margin that we can, that from the increased sales, because all the rest is taken up in our expenses, isn't it?
You have to say that again.
Okay. If we increase sales, we have to buy more.
Yes.
And we also hire more people. It costs more to operate the whole company.
Exactly.
So the only real increase from new customers would be in the margin, because all the rest is eaten up by expenses, isn't it?
Well, we work very hard. Again, I'm going to remind you that we work very hard to keep our expenses down.
I understand that. No, I'm not arguing that.
And I also think, though, Mike, that there is, yes, as we sell more, we have to buy more. But there is a certain margin baked into the rate for those sales. And so as those grow, we're still gaining some margin from it.
Yes,
but,
right.
But the cost is becoming more expensive as we buy it. So those margins are being eaten into. Yes. But there is revenue that comes from that sales growth,
yes,
as well.
Sure.
It's just not enough to meet the growth in cost.
Well, and if I understand your point correctly, we're going to suggest a rate increase here. But if Mesquite continues to be the fastest growing city in the state, and we continue to see interest and growth in Glendale, it's going to continue to drive our rates higher. Right now, the national average for power is 14 cents a kilowatt hour. And the more that we grow and the more that our solar and our hydro gets stretched out, the closer we're going to get to that 14 cent
yes.
level. So, right now, if our average customer uses about 1,200 kilowatt hours per month. And if you look at the average, that's about 7.8 cents a kilowatt hour. We're suggesting that we add, we're going to suggest a range to you, but let's say that we did 2 cents. That would take it to 9.7 cents. We're still far below that 14 cent national average, but the more we grow and the more we have to buy out on the market, we're just going to inch closer to that 14 cent range, or whatever that changes to in the future.
And we can adjust the rate next year, for instance, if it shows that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There's always an inherent risk of you're making your best guess now. The people at CFC are incredibly talented at doing revenue requirement studies, and it is an unbelievable amount of information that they analyze. I have great faith in their ability, but there's also you're making estimates on what you think are going to sell. There's also, every time that there is a rate increase, there is a push for conservation, and there's a push for people to help mitigate that rate increase. And so it's hard to quantify what exactly that's going to be. But I feel comfortable that the rate increase that we're suggesting should carry us through for the 3-year contract that we have with Tenasca. And as we start those contract negotiations in about a year and a half, we're going to have to look at what does the market look like then and where does that go. But for now, this is, I feel very comfortable with what we're asking for the rate increase.
But we're not guaranteeing any 3-year. We're guaranteeing, just change, this is what
correct.
We need to change now, and then
guarantee a month. And it's just the rate increase. Mm-hmm.
But like right now, we added Crown Point, added significant load, you know, also out in Moapa there was a load added, and so that dilutes our hydro and what have you. So we're passing those expenses on to those new customers, correct? So when we have this rate increase and we have some significant, like if the Mayan comes in or the data center comes in, will we be able to do the same thing so that they don't dilute the residential customer's rate because they're now almost paying all of it for $87.
So one of the things we have to be careful of is when we set a rate, that rate's available to everybody that comes to our area, unless they have a special contract. Mm-hmm. So residential customers, for example, even though we grow and it drives up the prices in the future, it's still going to be the same rate for everybody. But if we had a large entity like a manufacturer, a data center come in, we would probably do a special contract with them so that the size and the magnitude of what they're doing doesn't affect our existing customers. So
it will affect our costs. It will affect
yes.
Costs.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things when Dr. Moreau was the strategic officer that spoke to us at NREA, one of the things that he discussed that I thought was so innovative was that at their co-op, they actually created a subsidiary company purely to handle their data centers. Now, he's from Virginia. They have multiple data centers. I'm not suggesting that we create a subsidiary, but I think there's a lot of innovative ways for us to ensure that our rates and returns protect our current customers and then allow for growth of these major customers. Because we're not, like Minda said, we're not talking about somebody building a house. We're talking huge amounts of power. Yes.
Yeah, and that's a way to insulate everybody from
however,
from them.
Isn't there a little bit of a legal problem because we're a district government agency? We're not a co-op. Yeah, it's a co-op. They can do lots
yeah,
of
I'm not
things.
Suggesting we do that. Yeah. I'm just saying there's innovative ways for us to ensure that we set rates that protect all of our customers.
Our attorney figures those out, huh?
No, she figures them out. I tell her whether she can do it or not.
Yeah. He's good at bossing me.
I mean, because we are a utility in this state, there are a lot of limitations on
yes.
I'm promising to serve everybody sort of idea.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The co-ops have a little more flexibility than we do to do some things like that. But there are options out there for us that we'll work on.
I'm happy to answer any other questions, but tonight is for discussion only to get you guys thinking about this, and then we will be bringing this back to you next month.
Okay. I have some questions. Just with the news of this incredible power increase that we could be providing. It completely changes my feeling about generation, like natural gas or battery storage, or is there a way to get involved in the G&T relationship like that Dixie Power has or whoever else that the NREA was mentioning there in that contract? Because of power is going up and this push for renewables, that was I found that very interesting at the NREA meeting that some people want renewables at, no matter the cost. Mm-hmm. And some people want to do it efficiently. And I think we know what we want to do, right? So I think we need to be very proactive and exploring long-term benefits. If we're not going to be able to control these out-of-control renewable rates, what can we control and what should we do now so that in the end of 3 years we're well on the way to making a decision that's going to benefit us long-term?
So just so you're aware of that, we've already initiated discussions with four or five entities about doing our own generation because we see the same thing. There's two problems. One is, you know, the fact that buying it on the outside your company is expensive, but the other part of it is we're gonna reach a tipping point where we can't continue to bring large loads across NV Energy system because there's just no capacity. So it's gonna drive us to do some generation. But as we've talked to various companies about doing that, there's a lot of interest in partnering with us to do something like that. The problem is a Middle Eastern company has come into the United States and they've bought up all of the generators for the next 5 years. And so if we want to do a project, we need to start working on it soon, but the soonest we could do it is 7 to 7.5 years from right now. And so there isn't a lot of short-term solutions here, but there are things that we can do a little bit, you know, more medium-term to help solve this.
I can't remember the gentleman's name that gave the last presentation, Innovation.
Dr. Moreau.
Yes.
He mentioned about battery storage and then being excited about those rates, and that just requires more solar contracts and battery storage. What are those?
So here's the deal with batteries. Batteries are a decent technology. They don't work like they were predicted to work, but they can be effective. The problem is they're very expensive. So in somewhere where Virginia, where they're paying 16 cents or more a kilowatt hour, a battery makes sense because their rates are so high. Where we're at right now at 7 cents, a battery does not make sense. And I'll give you an example. If we got enough batteries to carry our system, it would cost us $400 million. And those batteries last 10 years. So every 10 years, you would have to pay $400 million to keep enough batteries to keep our company operating. It doesn't make any sense. It's too expensive for us. Or we would have to double our rates from here or something, like maybe even triple them. I don't know. It's just very expensive, and it makes sense in California where people have, I hear people telling me they have $1,200, $2,000 a month power bills. A battery makes sense there. But here it doesn't, not yet anyway.
I was visiting with a group in Phoenix area, and they have their own generation facility with batteries, and they're signing 3 to 5 year contracts at about 10.5 cents for that, guaranteeing that like so many megawatts of that. So what is the tipping point for
that
us?
Was a microgrid or
yes,
large microgrid, okay.
Yeah, it took care of probably 500 homes.
Okay.
So just so you know, just so you convert it, we send our contract at 87.70, and at 10.5 cents, that's $105 a megawatt hour. So they're still more expensive than us, but there are some, you know, maybe some opportunities in the future, and that's exactly what I'm discussing with the Arizona Electric Power Company. APCO is partnering in some things like that because they're trying to help all of the small utilities in Nevada and Arizona and some in Utah solve these very things. So that's why we're going to sign a letter of interest with them and try to find something that works for us long term. So we're trying to turn over every stone we can find.
Like right now, NV Energy, we get RFPs from them. They are in the process of doing $300 million battery storage facility project. I mean, they're running with this. I'm just like, what are you doing this for? I'm trying to just get my head around it. And when I heard him say that, I'm like, where are they at? You know, what is the industry supporting today? I mean, they just put one out at Reed Gardner, you know, and just They're getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
Up north, and they're doing it.
Part of that, though, is driven by the RPS, the Renewable Portfolio Standard, passed by the legislature. We're not big enough to be subject to that yet, but if we have some of these large loads come in, we're going to be. And you're required to have batteries and solar, and what you're required to do is pass on the cost to your customers. So that's something that's hanging out there, too.
That may be the time you say, no, we don't want it as a customer to a data center. Isn't it 250 megawatts or something like that?
We've had everything from 20 to 200 megawatts talk
to us.
No,
I mean, that's the limit where we would be
selling. We're at a million megawatt hours in sales per year.
Okay.
And we're about half that.
Yeah. So if our
we doubled,
we would be forced under those rules, which would drive costs significantly higher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On many levels, not just RPS.
If we look at generation gas, two things. One, if it really is 7 years out, it would be something we would really need to get going, meaning start the process, looking for that now. Otherwise, if we wait another 3-4 years, then we're 7 years out, unless the market changes, someone comes in, starts building. But the concern about that is with the way government is going, are they going to continue to regulate fossil fuel generators to the point that we build a facility and can't afford to run it because of the regulation?
Yeah.
Costs, I mean, taxes or whatever they want to throw on us for burning fossil fuels. I don't know how, I hope your crystal ball is working.
I was just going to say, if I could borrow yours, okay. Byron, that would be wonderful.
Well, and there's a lot of moving parts to this. We're working with one of our partners right now, and they're looking, you know, what would it take to do this? They're exploring whether we can even get gas across the existing gas lines to do a project. So, So we've got a lot of irons in the fire, and we'll see how things shape up as we go along.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Long glasses on to those. Review and possible approval to ratify Colorado River Commission contract number PO6/SLC.
You skip what used to be my favorite discussion.
I just want you all to notice one thing. The one thing that he's waiting for in this is that thing, and he took it. Let me read all the way before he realized that it wasn't what he wanted to hear. Well, how about we go with Jay then and discussion on 2025 capital projects? Sound better, Mendez?
That sounds better. And this used to be my favorite discussion, but it's going to be a little bit different. Stephen, pull up the 10-year capital project list. This is our 10-year list that we work through every year. You can see that we've crossed off some projects. We've been working hard and getting some things done. We're getting close to having the 69 kV bay expansion. We have the transformer in place and some foundations in place. That could happen soon, but we're going to talk about some options here. Our Tortoise 230 kV ring bus, Kevin and Kyle were showing you how we were moving jumpers and moving the load, so we're getting close to having that wrapped up. There'll still be a little bit of work left on the 69 kV portion of Tortoise Substation. Let's continue to go down, Stephen. We have some things in here, trucks that we've ordered that are still 3 and 4 years out. But we do have one that is scheduled for delivery. Let's go back up just 1 to 11. This truck is coming next year, so Kyle thinks it'll be here in the first half of next year. So we will get one of our trucks in. We ordered this back in 2020, 2, I believe. And so that will be finally delivered. The Tortoise to Gila line, Randall talked a little bit about that, about the contractors. Before we had a $17 million number in here, but we've been buying an awful lot of materials to get that line loaded, ready to go. We have our wire in place, and we've been getting poles and other things like that, so we have been getting materials in.
That's our additional cost, or is that the total cost of the project?
No, that's the remaining cost.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, yeah, we've already spent some money, and that's what we have yet to spend. And then you'll see some similar things on Raptor Substation, the transmission line to Raptor, the long drive switchyard. Those, again, we've spent some money, but that's what's remaining. We have a lot of new projects coming on here that are in red. And one of the things that you'll see is, when we started this list, it was a reliability list. We were doing projects for reliability. Now you're starting to see this list is becoming dominated by new projects that we need to meet growth to provide the capacity that's needed. So we're seeing a little bit of change, and this is going to take a little bit of rethinking and discussion as we go along, because we want to be ready to serve people that want to come here, but we don't want to get too far in advance, because we don't want to speculate in growth and spend money where it doesn't need to be spent. So we have to walk a pretty fine line here. So these are the projects. If you remember when we first showed you this list, it was somewhere like $42 million in reliability projects. Let's go down to the bottom here now, Stephen. So we're at $70 million. To do these projects. And again, this is across a 10-year spectrum, but the list continues to grow because of the number of substations that we're having to look at to meet potential growth. So,
but our margin, if it's 5 million, margin drops to 5 million, that's only 50 million to pay for some of these projects.
Well, And here's the next part of our discussion. That's a good lead-in. So, Stephen, go ahead and close this.
Well, before you close this, I would love to just see how we're doing. We have our budget that we had the last many years as we go. How are we doing with our budget? Are we staying there? Is it, because things are changing. I mean, it's not under your control, but inflation's out of control. Are we bleeding? Are we close?
A lot of these things in red, it was kind of interesting because, you know, we heard about inflation really going up, and the first year or two, we saw very little impact. But the last 2 years, we've been updating these numbers because costs are just skyrocketing. And so, for example, if we go to Raptor Substation that was up there just a little bit, we would have had that paid off by now if we were just in a regular situation. But with the add-ons, both for labor and materials, it's almost doubling the cost of some of our projects. And it's a big concern. Mm-hmm. And it's eaten up our borrowing, and it's eaten up the capability to do things.
No, we haven't really touched the borrowing yet. We still have $30 million sitting in the bank.
Well, we had 46, so we spent about $16 million of it.
Okay.
So to get some of these other projects done and to buy some of these materials. So we're starting to work our way through the borrowing.
Okay.
Okay, and that's why I want you to remember that $30,262,000, because that used to be $46 million. So that's what we've spent so far.
But while we've had it, we have made some money on it also.
Yes, we have. We have.
I mean, it's not like we borrowed $30 million and that's all we got. We've made money on that.
We borrowed it at the right time before rates went up, and we've received interest that has exceeded our payments.
Right.
But now the rates are going down, and we're not going to receive as much, but we're also going to be spending more, so we're not going to be able to get the return on that investment anymore either. But we need to get these projects done. So, Stephen, go to my that first spreadsheet that was open. The middle one. And blow that up. So we anticipate in 2025 a $5.5 million margin. And you know that we, every year, we identify projects that we need to do to, or that each department submits that they would like to do during the year. So you can see the totals here of what the departments want to do for the year. That's under the blue capital projects part. And you can see that if we take out our capital projects, which are $4.3 million, that we still have almost $1.2 million left from the anticipated margin that we would roll into the 10-year projects.
And you, that's 5.5, not anticipating a rate hike. That is
anticipating a rate hike. If we don't have a rate hike, we will do zero because we will be losing money.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I just wanted to be sure.
That's where we're at. And then you'll also notice that our 10-year projects that we have scheduled for the next year to year and a half are totaling $30 million. If you take out the margin that we have left over from this year, it comes in at $29,182,000. So that's about $1 million less than we have in the bank right now. We're getting to a place where we're going to have to be very careful. So let's go through some of these projects. Now I'm going to present some of these to you. I'm going to present what was submitted to us. We already held a meeting this morning about how we can cut things, but we want to get comments from you guys, and we will make further cuts based on your comments, and we'll bring this back to you next month for approval when we can talk about what's cut and what we feel like we need to do and what's a priority and all that kind of stuff, okay? So again, just keep in mind, we've talked about this, but we want to get your thoughts too. So let's go to admin, Stephen. So just two things on here. Oh, geez, who spelled that? So we have security cameras, $85,000. I will just tell you that was a recommendation from the Department of Homeland Security analysis that they did here. And then we need to do some work on the Mesquite Engineering Building, paint and recarpet, something that we have on the list for this year, but possibility that we could push this off a year or so if we needed to.
Spot's good.
I'm looking at the carpet.
Let's go to engineering. Look at those numbers there on the top. The bottom ones we moved over to the 10-year list. So we have the Mesquite sub to Riverside Road, a conductor upgrade, a 138 kV switch near Yucca Switchyard, which we think is going to be a pretty important thing once we get this new solar development online. We have distribution pole replacements. This is what we try to do every year, replacing poles that have tested bad or that have lived their life. Metering structure, that is for the PV generation. That will be placed at the county, Lincoln County, Clark County line where we change from Lincoln County Power District to our system. The Sand Hill Boulevard Underground, install conduits before the city repaves the road. We try to do that so we don't have to make any cuts and then have to repave the road ourselves. Okay. And then transmission pole replacements, just like the distribution ones, we try to change
question
out a number.
Underground.
Yes.
Couldn't that, it seems like that could easily be postponed, and it costs a lot of money to take out and put in brand new underground. Why do it at all? I mean,
we're moving overhead underground.
Hmm?
Oh, is that overhead underground?
Yeah, we're moving overhead. We're just getting the conduit in. All them city Mesquite's redoing the roads.
Okay.
We'll get the conduit in.
Road open already.
Yeah.
Now, are you talking about the first one or the second one?
Ten.
Number seven. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I understood that was just conduit.
I don't know if mine did.
Okay. But, yeah, they're just putting in conduits. But up at the top one, mm-hmm. Mesquite sub to Riverside Road, we're upgrading the conductor size. It's because we're trying to be able to pack the loads.
Yeah. No. That's fine. I was just asking. Why put in underground? Does it save us money? What is the advantage? Why are we spending extra money if we have a service line that already goes there, and we take it out and put underground. We do have those projects, right?
Yeah, we do, but we don't have any on this list. These are all just underground jobs. But yeah, you're exactly right. We've tried to limit those lately because they're very expensive.
Yeah, and what's the hurricane? Yeah. Hurricane save. Oh, I hadn't thought of that. But we can ask for assistance from our neighbors.
Yes,
no, it's just a question that comes up.
We could just continue to replace wood poles with ductile poles and make it last longer. It's just for reliability, underground is more reliable than overhead. That's a concern.
Is it some of them flood? I mean, some of the conduit floods, right?
They do. We just haven't had a problem.
So, I mean, I'm just asking you guys, you know, what's the offset here? Why do it? Is it worth it? Does it give us some advantage? If those advantage, what's the disadvantage?
Yeah, if there's no advantage to that, we've backed off from doing those right
now. I've never used to do them on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nicer to have underground, but it's for the homeowner, perhaps, but...
Yeah, unless somebody's doing a project where they're helping pay for it, we're not doing those right now. Just because we've got a lot of projects to do. There were no things under finances. Let's go under line ops.
Just because I have to.
Jonathan deserves something for having nothing on the capital budget.
Way to go, Jonathan. So... they've submitted to replace a 1987 Hope Davis single reel wire trailer, two pickups, and an Expedition. And we've talked about all of those, about if we can push those off or not.
But those are relatively small ticket items.
They are, yeah, they're relatively small. And the one thing that we want to be careful of is sometimes it's good to push those back, but sometimes they build up in the future and then it becomes a nuisance in the future too. Sure. So we want to be careful that we still keep things up to snuff, but we push off all that we can. Let's go to sub-ops. Cat banks to reduce losses. That's on the distribution side. Update communication processors in the substations. Substation security, this goes hand in hand with the cameras that we're doing. A 138 kV circuit breaker that we need to change out, and then security fencing. So we need to do some work. That's in preparation to do security fencing.
What type of fencing are we talking about going with?
So we'll talk about that in executive session, if that's okay. When we met with the Department of Homeland Security, they said you guys need to talk to your board about the security measures you're taking, but never do it in an open meeting.
Right.
Talk about what and where privately, so you're not tipping off anybody that can read your minutes and know what you're doing and where they can strike. So we'll be glad to talk about that later.
Maybe we ought to check our audience for security.
Let's go to the 10-year plan now. This is the shocker. So we have a number of projects that we're working on. Many of these are already started. The Tortoise to Gila line we've talked about a little bit. The ring bus we've talked about a little bit. Falcon Ridge sub bay 2. That's a project that we think that we can push off for a couple of years, because if we get Raptor substation done, that will help in that area and lessen the need for that. We also have some work to do at Painted Hills Bay 4 and a Mesquite sub upgrade that if we do those can eliminate one of those substation projects. And Kevin's found a creative way to upgrade the Mesquite substation and use all the material from that substation to upgrade and take it up here to Painted Hills to do that, so it's kind of saving us a little bit of cost on those two. So we're going to work on those. Now, last year we talked about the Overton Crew Barn. That's something that we've talked about taking off the list as well.
Or at least push it out a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, push it out a couple of years. Cutting it off this list, but still keeping it on. Because long term, we're still going to need that. But we probably don't need it the next year. So if we're able to accomplish all those, and that's not guaranteed. We've been, like you asked before, we've been slowed down by the rate that we can acquire materials and transformers. There's no guarantee that we can do this, but this is what we are working on right now. $30 million worth of projects.
And that is in a 10-year period.
This is a one to one and a half year period.
I didn't think that was the answer, but
we took
saw
these,
the number 10 at the top, and I thought, well.
Yeah, we took these off the 10-year list, and we put them on our one-year list because these are active. But you can see that, you know, by postponing a couple projects, we can easily take off about $6 or $7 million, which is okay, but it's not, that's still a lot of money.
But also there is delays happening. Because
yeah.
I looked at the list before, and some of these projects were as supposed to be done.
Yeah.
And that's happening. It's just the delays in getting bids and equipment and everything. So
yeah, exactly.
Pushing it out.
Exactly.
And some of these, like the equipment, the farther we push it out, the more they cost. I know I was talking with Kyle. You know, the truck that we're getting today, or, you know, it doubled in price in the last 4 years. When we bought that new crane for the same price, you know, it's a 35-ton crane, the same price as we're getting a bigger derrick now.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we push it off, those costs continue to go up.
And those costs on those previous tabs, I mean, you know, they add up. I don't want to make that sound like it's no big deal. But it's a drop in the bucket compared to these projects that we're doing and, you know, that we're covering in 1 year. So I'm going to email you guys this spreadsheet that you can look over this, and then we'll make a decision on this in November and see what we want to press forward with and if we agree with what we're postponing. And this used to be my favorite discussion, but the numbers are growing so rapidly.
Well, at least Melissa, I have somebody to blame it on.
She's always got that. She's always got that.
It's done all the time on TV. I see it.
And if she doesn't use that excuse, she's crazy.
Old guy or the dead guy.
Is there any more discussion on this, or not until next time? Hearing no answers, can I go to item K now?
Okay.
Review and possible approval to ratify Colorado River Commission CRC contract number PO6/SLCESC amendment number 1.
So if you read this, which I'm sure you have, we have a contract with CRC, the Colorado River Commission. Colorado River Commission has a contract with WAPA, the Western Area Power Administration. So the CRC is our intermediary. So there was a requirement when we renewed our contracts a few years ago with WAPA that there needed to be some changes made. And CRC has been negotiating with WAPA on how to do that. And CRC came up with a way to satisfy WAPA. And it had to do with the transmission charges. The controversy here is the people who own Parker Davis Transmission, since they're not getting their full allocation of hydropower, they want to be able to use the transmission for other purposes or even sell that to somebody who wants to use it on a monthly basis and recover the costs. So for WAPA to do that, they had to have a way to do that, which means that they suggested some contract language, but Colorado River Commission said, how about if we just break it up into two line items? Right now we pay for transmission. It's folded into our energy charge. We're just going to charge it for energy and transmission. Total, if you don't sell any transmission, you're going to be exactly the same. But if you want to do something with it, then it's a line item so you can break it out. So that's the whole purpose of this. The reason we're ratifying this is Colorado River Commission approved this the day before our last board meeting, and we had to have the signed contract back to them by October 1st. So we went ahead and executed that, and now we're bringing this for your approval. And
so we can have two lines on our bill.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have two lines on our bill, and hopefully that you agree with us that was okay. If not, you know.
Well.
You don't have permission
yeah.
to ask what it is. Okay.
You can tell the Colorado River Commission I did a bad thing.
I move that we ratify the CRC contract number as presented.
Zach, I would say.
Sorry, Mike, you're out. I'm giving that one to Dale.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the ratify the Colorado River Commission contract. You got all the numbers right, Betty?
Yeah, I got you.
Amendment number one, that's the important part. Amendment number one.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, any public comments? Hearing no public comments, any trustee comments?
When
we were at the Sacramento conference, one of the things that the class I went to talked about the importance of safety, of course, is big. And it suggested that if you're, the question came up about, does your general manager go to the meetings? And, generally, yes. But they also said, well, how about your board members? Especially if the GM can't make it, do you have board members? And I thought, hey, that might be useful to show the board's commitment to safety. That one of us show up, if you can't make it or something, or you even invite us once in a while, seems like it stresses to the employees that we care about safety. We're pretty good on that. So that was an idea I thought I'd just bring back to you. I thought that was a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
I think it's an excellent idea, and I think just send us an invitation of it. I can guarantee you half the time, at least, none of us will show up. But we will all be decent enough to RSVP. I know on sexual harassment, I'm probably not going to show up for that one. But you will have some that I knew as like fire extinguishers. I've been on the fire department for 10 years and am still afraid of fire extinguishers. So I would, that's one I might come in and attend. So an invitation would be a nice thing, and if we can do it, it would be great.
So yeah. Kyle and our safety committee, I think, do a great job, and we would be proud to have you guys come if you'd like.
They do a fabulous job. I have worked for some big companies, never seen any safety department that takes care of business like you guys do. Nowhere.
And you don't have to overload it with all coming at one time, but invite a member, and they can't come, invite another, to get somebody showing up once in a while.
Yeah.
I think would be very useful.
Yeah. Any other trustee comments?
I'm going to make you come to CPR. So
I only have one comment. It has nothing to do with power. Sorry, but I'm doing it. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm a 14-year survivor. I appreciate the research that has been done through the years. I had friends, parents who died in the early 60s. Don't date me. And I appreciate that the Mesquite Fire Department and the Moapa Valley Fire District, each October, they get together and they do a Find a Cure drive. And I just really appreciate it. I went to Mesquite last week and they were out front selling, and I thought I was going to cry, because it sounds stupid, but when you survive something like that, you appreciate that there are people out there that may not even be involved, but they care. So I just hope you all appreciate, because at some time in your life, somebody you know will be affected. That's just what it is.
Well, congratulations on being a 14-year survivor.
Yes,
that's awesome.
I will continue on.
That's awesome.
Any other trustee comments? Okay, then get glasses on. Approval of the next board meeting, November 20th, 3 p.m. at the Overton Boardroom.
I move the next meeting be held November 20th at Overton Boardroom at 3 p.m.
I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
And then we will leave this, take a break from this meeting, go into executive session.